You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The New Zealand Human Rights Commission has reported that since the beginning of the pandemic last year, 4 out of 10 respondents to research in Aotearoa have experienced an uptick in racial discrimination. 55% of tangata whenua respondents said they'd experienced discrimination, 54% of Chinese respondents, 50% of Pacifica respondents, and 49% of wider Asian respondents. Also within the United States, we have seen a steep uptick of anti-Asian hate crimes and violence. And recently in New York City, there have been protests against the racism and discrimination being faced by Asian communities. Zoe Larson-Cumming spoke to Race Relations Commissioner at the Human Rights Commission, Meng Foon, and began by asking why the pandemic has become such a breeding ground for racism and discrimination.
Personally, I think that racism is the underbelly of our nation. I think it's been in our communities for a long time. And this unfortunate pandemic was an opportunity for those to come out of that underbelly and to express their racist thoughts publicly. I think it's one of these historical human traits that we have in our country since the signing of Te Tiriti to government making laws against Chinese people in terms of the poll tax, to the dawn raids of the Pacific people, to the immigrants that have come after the war, the Dutch. It's been a underbelly of racism for a long time. Being people of colour, we're very easily identified, easy to vilify and taunt and harass, and that's been unfortunate part of the not so good New Zealand culture.
How do you think the xenophobic rhetoric of politicians when addressing the pandemic, such as former President of the United States Donald Trump's coining of the term the China virus, has affected the rise in anti-Asian racism, not only in the States, but here in Aotearoa?
It's not only Trump, right? So we've had some members of parliament, one in the south, that cause xenophobic fear in the Southland community, and that MP has been stood down. We've had a MP come out and use the pandemic as a political license to condemn Māori for their actions and looking after their people in terms of checkpoints. And so leadership is important in any country, any organization, and people need to actually take responsibility in what they say. If we were to progress and come out of this COVID, we need to be sensible in all of our comments.
Do you think politicians in New Zealand have taken enough responsibility?
I would say the majority have. It's only always the one or two that come out and say silly things that undermine what the majority are wanting to do.
Last year, the Racism is No Joke campaign was launched to address online racism that often comes in the form of memes or jokes or quote-unquote casual racism. New Zealand, as you've mentioned, has this underbelly of incredibly casual and not so casual racism, and it's often brushed off as, oh, well, it's just a joke. What do you think the relationship between casual racism online and the spike in discrimination we're seeing here is, and also the spike in what is in some cases deadly race-motivated violence abroad?
The unfortunate thing about casual racism is because it's used so many times, and the fear of doing anything about it is that a lot of ethnic people and people that are discriminated against generally just laugh it off, not engage in it. What we encourage is actually people to stand up, be an upstander. If you feel unsafe of being the upstander, we encourage people to actually get their friends to support them and ensure that they actually document events such as discrimination, racism in the workplace, to make sure that time, place, and what is said is documented, because when we go to authorities, we tend to suddenly become the victim again, being victimized again for bringing these issues up. It's very uncomfortable, and it takes a very brave person or persons to actually raise these matters in organizations. This cowardly internet warrior social media warrior, it's very hard to actually police. But what we just thanking the Prime Minister for the Paris Accord, and the Paris Accord is called out to social media platforms that they need to actually also take responsibility for what their platforms are publishing. And now that they are taking this more seriously and deleting President of America's Twitter account and Facebook account has certainly made a big difference. And we here at the Human Rights Commission lobby very hard to our digital monitoring department and the broadcasting standards to ensure that they too put a lobby for this type of behavior to be deleted. So media leadership, media platforms have a big role in how society thinks and operates, not quelling the freedom of speech, but knowing that freedom of speech actually comes with responsibilities.
As mentioned at the beginning of the interview, tangata whenua have experienced the biggest increase of discrimination since the beginning of the pandemic in Aotearoa, closely followed by Chinese New Zealanders. Overseas, such as in the United States, it's mostly Asian Americans who have faced an extreme uptick in racism and discrimination. Why here in Aotearoa do you think also tangata whenua are bearing that brunt?
Tangata whenua has had a negative narrative in the media for a long time. And I think the COVID-19 has just accumulated, accentuated or illuminated that racist behaviour. And it's just built on and built on over decades of subjection, denigration to Māori. The narrative has very seldom been positive, but we're hoping that narrative will start to change now, and especially with more of our stories being published and more that history is going to be taught in schools, and those are the mitigating factors for us going into the future.
Often New Zealanders, and in particular Pākehā New Zealanders, don't react well when confronted by our own racism and racist colonial history. I'm thinking particularly of the outrage when Taika Waititi described New Zealand as racist as F. And often when we do talk about racism in New Zealand, it's often brushed off as, oh, well, we're not as bad as Australia, we're not as bad as the States. Why do you think it's so difficult for New Zealanders, and predominantly Pākehā New Zealanders, to talk about race? And how do we get to that place where we're having confrontational, vulnerable, and ultimately productive conversations?
I think the tide is turning. In the last year that I've been in my job, that this word racism has actually been more in the forefront of the media. It's been debated. It's been the leadership of the government has come to the fore in terms of that we need to develop a national action plan against racism. The messages during COVID of being kind and respectful has been a strong support to eliminate discrimination. I think the matter regarding what you've just mentioned is that there is a fear of control and power. It's not too different to women's rights and liberation. When women needed the vote, the men feared that women were incompetent to actually exercise a vote in the beginning, and then the fear that women may be actually making decisions. And that's an inbuilt culture of mainly men controlling things in the world as they have done in history. Now the government and I suggest that other organisations, they all need to be deliberate. Deliberate if they say that there is not enough women, Māori, Pacific, Asians on boards, in leadership roles, they need to actually make it a KPI, a key performance indicator. And sometimes, you know, in some countries, they've made it law that if mirror on society, policies need to be acted upon, not just spoken about.
You're currently leading the work alongside the government to create a national action plan against racism. What's that plan going to look like?
Well, the plan from my role is supporting the Ministry of Justice. We have been delegated the role to communicate with social society, We have no idea. I have no idea what that is going to look like, because I want the answers to actually come from our communities. Our communities in the public, our communities in the workforce, our communities in government, they have the solutions. And we not only do we need the actions, but we also need a piece of policy from our communities to say, what is the policy that organizations can easily adopt? They come up with the actions, but also how to achieve the actions. And so we want those suggestions from people that have lived experiences, people that are in this game. And the other thing that we want is actually, what are their stories? Tell us your stories. So at the present time, we just want to make sure that it's organically driven. We don't want it to be top down, but we definitely want it from the community. We want the community to have ownership of this.
When do you hope it will be introduced?
Well, my timeline for our part is 6 months, and then we'll pass our recommended report, our action plan over to the Ministry of Justice, and then it will be up to the government's processes to adopt that whenever they in their timelines.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.